Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to meet the new commander of the St. Paul District's U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, learn about the Veterans Homeless Landlord Initiative, and visit the state senior enlisted advisor of the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Our state's Yellow Ribbon Network is an incredible resource as we work to connect service members, veterans, military families, employers, and communities. They help ensure the resilience of those who serve. Started right here in Minnesota, our Yellow Ribbon program is now the model for networks across the nation. Since we proclaimed our first Yellow Ribbon Network in 2008, hundreds more have emerged in counties, cities, communities, and at companies statewide. These self-sustaining networks draw together agencies, community leaders, and volunteers. They strive to support the service members, veterans, and military families of any age and from any era that live and work in their area. The continued growth and improvement of this program is vitally important as service members and their families continue to adapt to increasing demands and training requirements we see across the force. To all of our incredibly generous and dedicated Yellow Ribbon volunteers, thank you. You help ensure our service members and their families remain resilient and ready to serve. If you're ready to join a Yellow Ribbon network near you or make your large company or community Yellow Ribbon, please visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. That's beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Colonel Carl Jansen assumed command of the St. Paul District July 10th, 2019, becoming the district's 66th commander and district engineer, and he's joining us today in the studio. Colonel Jansen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be on with you.
And welcome to Minnesota, sir.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Can you share with our listeners how long have you been in the Army?
So I've been an officer in the Army for 22 years and just moving here from the Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
And I understand you've been deployed a couple of times.
I have. Deployed in the late 90s to Kuwait for Operation Desert Fox, and later in 2004 to 2005 with Operation Iraqi Freedom.
And, sir, are you a registered professional engineer?
I am. So I did study engineering in college at the undergraduate and graduate level, and I'm a professional engineer in the state of Washington.
And I understand you've filled the position of the commander of a district for the Corps of Engineers a couple other times.
I have. I'm new to St. Paul District, but I'm not new to the Corps of Engineers. Had several assignments with the Seattle District. I commanded the Buffalo District and served at our headquarters in Washington, D.C.
And, sir, we've had two or three of your predecessors on the show at least once a year in the past, and I'm told that there's nearly 700 people that are employed by the St. Paul District, and they tell me that you've got a marvelous staff that you're inheriting.
It is. It's a great team. They have a great reputation. A lot of people don't know that those 700 are members of the Army Civilian Corps, so they're professionals. Professional civilians from a wide range of backgrounds.
Sir, can you explain to me, I've observed this several times because you come in and you're commander for about 3 years ordinarily. You're an active duty officer and you're serving as the commander of the St. Paul District. Why does the Army have an active duty officer be the man in charge of all of these civilians?
Well, it's an Army unit and it really traces back to our history over 234 years. We're just 2 days younger than the United States Army, which was founded with the Continental Army in 1775. And from the very beginnings of our nation, we needed engineering capability. Most of that came from West Point graduates. And over time, the Army and the civil works of our nation just grew hand in hand.
We're speaking with Colonel Carl Jansen, the St. Paul District the U.S. Army Corps of Engineer Commander on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, can you tell us how many districts are there? The St. Paul District actually is multi-state, isn't it?
It is. So St. Paul District serves the people of Minnesota, Wisconsin, North and South Dakota, and portions of Iowa. But there are 43 districts across the nation and the globe. The Corps of Engineers divides those primarily among watershed boundaries and then subdivides those 43 into divisions. We're part of the Mississippi Valley Division, which comprises of the St. Paul, Rock Island, St. Louis, Memphis, Vicksburg, and New Orleans districts.
And Colonel, it's been interesting to watch as we have disasters around the United States over the last few years, whether it's a hurricane or the floods down in Houston, down in Texas, those kind of things. I understand that when one area needs some help, the people can flow from one district to another district and supply the support necessary.
They do. It's all hands on deck when it's disaster season, whether that be a hurricane, a flood, a wildfire. So our civilians will step up to the challenge. They may leave their family and their job behind and step into a new disaster response role. Could be providing housing to displaced citizens, could be fighting floods with sandbags and technical expertise, or helping with contracting on a really large scale. And besides the disasters, many of them go overseas and support contingency operations in places like Iraq or Afghanistan.
And, sir, we've also observed that when there are disasters in Florida or Texas that we've seen the last couple of years, the Minnesota National Guard is called upon to come down there with some of their equipment, their helicopters, their soldiers, their airmen. And you work with the Guard and some other agencies within the district very closely.
Yeah, we always like to work hand in hand. We call that the total force. So all of those capabilities that are brought to bear, National Guard in particular, with their homeland national defense mission, brings incredible capabilities to local communities.
And, sir, the one thing we've talked about, I think, every year on this show is we have a lot of snow sometimes in the winter, and that can cause trouble in the spring with flooding. And so we normally have a Homeland Security show where we ask someone from your office to come on, and we have the Minnesota National Guard on, and we have Homeland Security on, and they start talking about planning and how much planning and how much they expect going to happen every spring with flooding. We thought this year was going to be an easy year, but then it started raining.
Yeah, amazing to step into this job in the middle of 2019, which I think will go down in history as one of the more significant flooding years. It's interesting to see how the community reacts and how all of the second and third order effects from that flooding impacts the communities, from the industry to local businesses along the river.
And Colonel, one of the other things we've seen is that some of your people from the St. Paul District know very well the folks from the Minnesota National Guard and from Homeland Security and from the sheriffs and the police departments, because they do a lot of training so that when there is an emergency, they're not trading business cards. They can call on each other and they can figure out what do we need, where do we need it, and how fast.
Right. We're able to respond because of those activities prior to disaster. And great setup between the interagency and those local partners to plan ahead of time and predict what could happen and how we'll respond.
Colonel, I'm curious if your predecessor, I'm sure you met with him before he left. Maybe he's still here. I don't know. I haven't seen Colonel Calkins for a while. Did he give you a briefing on the way in about perhaps some of the flooding and maybe some hot spots he thought were coming up, or maybe something he just really enjoyed while he was here for a few years?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a great transition. I moved here a couple weeks early before we had a change of command ceremony, just so I could get to know him and hear all of his reflections after a 3-year command. He thought the world of the St. Paul District and the people of Minnesota in this region. He had a great assignment. From all the different things we do, he plugged in with the community. His family enjoyed it here. He's since retired and started a new chapter of his life in Colorado.
In Colorado. Well, we won't see Colonel Sam for a while then, but we wish him well. He was fun to talk to while he was here. Colonel, there's a whole list of items that the St. Paul District works on, and we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to run through those activities and make sure that our listeners all over Minnesota have a better idea of what happens at the St. Paul District, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, besides just dredging the river.
Sounds great.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with Colonel Carl Jansen, who assumed command of the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on July 10th, becoming the district's 66th commander, and he is a district engineer. And, sir, as I asked you in the first segment, I understand you're a registered professional engineer and a certified project management professional. And I think maybe our listeners don't know that there's a lot of administration that you probably have to deal with over there, but you got a great team.
We do have a great team.
Do you actually let contracts out to subcontractors to help with some of the work? Is there a lot of that going on as part of it?
Right. The Congress appropriates all the funds for the Corps of Engineers to conduct their operations, and a large portion of those funds are contracted out to local and small businesses to undertake the work across our various business lines.
And Colonel, I want to just run through some of the things that the district takes care of. As everyone knows here, as I mentioned before, when we think of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, they're talking about the Mississippi River and the locks and dams and maintaining a navigational channel. And certainly that's still part of the job, isn't it?
It is. That's probably one of the more visible portions of the work we do, and it is strategically significant. Our 9-foot channel extends from Minneapolis to Guttenberg, Iowa. That's about 240 miles. We operate and maintain 13 locks and dams along that reach, as well as the connecting channel between those. That connects in with the broader Mississippi River navigation system. In essence, it connects the upper Midwest to the rest of the world.
Now, Colonel, we've had a lot of rain this spring, and the rivers have been high, and the currents have been strong. Does that help maintain those channels, or is that a problem?
Well, that creates a challenge for us and for industry. So this year, the navigation system got off to a slow start with about a 2-month delay before barge traffic could make it all the way up the river system. The other effect from those higher waters is more sedimentation or shoaling, which means we need to dredge more out of our channels to keep them open for safe and efficient navigation.
So it was a problem because the water was too high and too fast, and the residual problem is it left a lot of sediment that you have to remove.
A lot of sediment. Think about this, Tom. We dredge about 1 million cubic yards of sediment out of the channels each year. A cubic yard is about the size of your dishwasher. So if you imagine that lined up on a highway, it would stretch about 550 miles.
Is that sediment generally clean, Colonel?
It's excellent quality sediment. It's usually sand and gravel and has great purposes for other uses for communities in their road work and other construction projects.
And Colonel, we talked in the first segment about the flooding. There's been a serious flooding here, and I hope that's settling down. But one of the other things that the St. Paul District does is you're responsible for issuing permits for work in wetlands and any work around navigable rivers. Is there a lot of that throughout the district? There must be.
Absolutely, Tom. You know, we're in the land of 10,000 lakes, so of course there are a lot of wetlands that we're concerned about. We're one of the top districts in all of the Corps of Engineers in terms of considering permit applications. It's all about supporting economic development, but in a sustainable way. So these permits can range from industrial developments down to an individual permit for stabilizing a bank along a river, or even in some cases, putting a dock in.
So if anyone wants to make any changes to a wetland area, they've got to come through you and try to work out something that's mutually beneficial.
Right. And that's our philosophy. We always want to help the applicant find a way to achieve what they want to do in a way that will preserve the resource for the future.
Colonel, I've heard in the past that some people want to do something with one piece of land, and occasionally they'll go buy some other wetlands and kind of make a trade so that you've got more wetlands over here and maybe a little less on this side. Does some of that still happen?
It does, and I think we're going to see more of that. We call that mitigation banking. So if we can develop a real high-quality wetland elsewhere in the state and support development by purchasing credits in these wetlands, then it's a way to have a trade-off and improve the resource over time.
I think that feels like it's a good tool to use, and it's good to know that people can still do that. They may be disrupting a few feet of shoreline, but if you've got another couple hundred feet somewhere else, it's kind of a good trade.
It is. It provides for some flexibility.
We're speaking with Colonel Carl Jansen, the new district commander of the St. Paul District Corps of Engineers on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, as I'm sure you're aware, up here in Minnesota, we love to fish and we love to hunt, and we're always concerned about wildlife habitat, and there's never enough fish. So, but I understand that environmental restoration programs and some of those issues are paramount for the district as well.
It is. So Congress gives the Corps of Engineers many authorities to conduct work across our business lines, and ecosystem restoration is one of them. So we're proud to get involved with a lot of the resource agencies like the Department of Natural Resources, or in some cases at the federal level, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or the EPA. and find habitat restoration opportunities that we can leverage some of our federal authorities and resources to improve the environment.
Yeah, Colonel, one of the things I learned some years ago when we started doing this show and I was interviewing your predecessors was the St. Paul District of the Corps of Engineers is one of the biggest recreational managers of camp facilities, reservoirs, campgrounds, day use areas, boat ramps, and swimming beaches in that area. That just amazed me. I grew up here and I didn't know it.
They are. In fact, across the nation, the Corps of Engineers is the top federal provider of recreation to the public, and that's also the case here in Minnesota. A lot of this traces back to some of our flood reservoirs that were built in the late 1800s, originally for supporting navigation and now recreation. We'll have trained park rangers who operate these facilities and interact with the general public, help educate on nature while providing a first-rate recreation experience.
Sir, you've got a lot of missions to cover. And it's going to be fun to watch how that works over the next 4 years. But I want to ask you a question when it comes to the locks and dams. They've been there for a long time. They're not new by any means. But it's my understanding that every year there's serious maintenance that takes place. The reports you've gotten as you first start, are they in pretty good shape?
They are in great shape. In fact, I just wrapped up a four-day tour of all of our locks and dams down the river. I met all of the people we have working there 24/7 to keep them safe and in great shape. We're always investing into the locks and dams to keep them safe. Right now, we're going through probably a 10 to 20-year period of intense maintenance that'll keep them going for hopefully another 100 years and more.
Sir, have you discovered, is there anything we can do to prevent the kind of flooding we had in the southern half of the state this year? It's probably too early into your command to know that.
Well, Mother Nature always gets a vote. I think our job in the Corps of Engineers and citizens across the state is monitor the conditions, think about resilient development. But then when we do have those higher waters, I think our priority is life safety. And one thing I have noticed since I've arrived in the area is the risk to boaters. And I always like to highlight water safety and the need to wear your life jacket when you're on the water. You never plan to have an accident, but when you do, you're going to want to have that life jacket on.
Very good, sir. We just got a couple of minutes left, sir. As we said in the first segment, the St. Paul District employs nearly 700 professionals that work at more than 40 sites in five upper Midwest states, and we've covered a lot of those duties. Employment's tight and has been for a few years. How are you doing on hiring? Have you got enough people? And I know you've got a lot of great people, but some retire and some get to the end of their careers.
We have a wonderful workforce, and we're always looking to expand. It's important to know that a lot of our employees have prior military service or are currently serving in the Guard or Reserve. So heavy veterans. And I think it's because while they're in the military, they get a good sense of public service and a sense of mission accomplishment. And that's what they get when they come work for the Corps of Engineers. Anybody who's interested out there, from being an accountant to a biologist or an engineer, we have a wide range of professions. And all they need to do is check USA Jobs for those opportunities.
So USA Jobs.
That's correct.
Go online and they can check that. And your headquarters is over in St. Paul?
It is. We're headquartered downtown St. Paul, and we've got 41 field sites across those five states.
So you need all kinds of people, men, women, engineers, staff, accountants, all kinds, and you've got some openings.
You name it, we've got it, Tom.
All right, sir. Well, I hope you have a flurry of activity with that hiring. And is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to in the next few years besides getting to know Minnesota a little better?
Well, it's great to be back in Minnesota. My mom was born here in Wadena. She's got six brothers and sisters who reside across the state. I used to spend some of my summers growing up. I would come out from Colorado and visit with them. I get to reconnect with them. And it's neat that I can pair their love of the state with my job here in the St. Paul District.
Well, that knowledge will give you a little jump start on the district and getting to know everybody. But somehow I think you're going to be a frequent traveler for months now, just getting to know all of the facilities, the 40 sites in five states, and a lot of good people to meet, sir.
It's great to hit the road and see all the great work we have ongoing, and especially the wonderful people who step up to do it.
Colonel, I want to wish you well and hope we're looking forward to talking to you in the future. And once again, if you're interested in a job, go to where?
USA Jobs, Tom.
All right, Colonel, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, and thanks for all you do for our military community.
Yes, sir. That was Colonel Carl Jansen, who assumed command of the St. Paul District U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on July 10th, becoming the district's 66th commander. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk about Veterans Homelessness Landlord Initiative with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Have you served honorably? Are you a Minnesota resident? And are you interested in higher education? If you answered yes to these questions, you may be eligible for education benefits in Minnesota. The Minnesota GI Bill program provides post-secondary educational assistance to eligible Minnesota veterans, non-veterans who have served in the military, and eligible spouses and children. The purpose of this bill is to get Minnesota veterans back to work. The plan starts with education, and the first step is finding the financial assistance available to get them there. For full eligibility requirements, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. So I said at the opening, we're going to talk about ending veterans homelessness, and we have some guests today from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and our first guest is Paul Williams, who is the Homeless Programs Coordinator with the MDVA, which stands for Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
I understand you've been busy the last couple of weeks doing some things with the governor.
Yes.
Mankato, and you were at a VFW post yesterday.
Yeah, so a lot of exciting things happening in our work, and really grateful to have such strong support from the governor. We're following his lead on these events, and on July 18th in Mankato, we held an event for the River Valley Southeast Continuum of Care. And their declaration that they have effectively ended veteran homelessness. And so that's a real milestone for any area in the state. And so we went down and celebrated with them at that event. And then just yesterday we had a landlord engagement summit, at the VFW in Minneapolis. And so, it was an opportunity for the governor, to join and really ask landlords, to join the fight to end veteran homelessness. We've housed over 1,800 veterans since the registry launched in 2014, and we have 207 that are currently on the registry right now that need a place to live. And in this current rental market that's just so tight, we felt that it deserved an appeal to landlords.
Well, you brought a couple of your team members in today. Would you like to introduce the first one?
Yeah, so with me is Sloan Kessler. She's the Assistant Homeless Programs Coordinator with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Sloan, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be here.
Sloan, Paul mentioned the Veterans Registry that we've been reading some promos about for years. Can you tell us what that is?
Sure. So the Homeless Veteran Registry is a by-name list that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs holds, and we facilitate biweekly case conferencing meetings. And we're really looking to advance housing plans for veterans who are experiencing homelessness and really connect them to the resources that they need.
So the big question is, how do you find the veterans who are homeless?
There's a couple of ways that we can do that, but we really, like Paul was talking about before, we rely on partners, a lot of federal VA employees and the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans to do some targeted outreach. Anyone who's experiencing homelessness can always call our linkage line, which is 1-888-LINK-VET. And through that linkage line, we're able to then get in contact with any veteran who is experiencing homelessness or might be at risk of homelessness or just generally needs some help. So we encourage all of our partners to call that line if they know of anybody, or even a referral can be made from any person who knows of somebody that's in that situation.
So if our listeners know of a veteran that's in distress or a veteran that's homeless, they can go to 1-888-LINK-VET and arrange to get them some help. And that's the first place to start.
That's the first place to start. And they'll be added to the Homeless Veteran Registry, where we will then begin that case conferencing process.
Paul, I want to come back to you. This year, we've got a new governor in office, and you've got a new commissioner, Larry Herkey. And I understand both of them are really serious about getting to functional zero. What is that?
Functional zero. So, yes, first off, it's just really exciting to have the support of the governor and multiple commissioners of a couple different agencies. And so that level of support has really energized the effort and really the goal of ending veteran homelessness across the state of Minnesota. And the governor's goal is to be the fourth state in the country to do that in Minnesota. So so just generally what that means to reach functional zero is that, you know, there's currently, like I said, 207 veterans on the Homeless Veteran Registry. To clear the waiting list of veterans who are currently on it is not to say that we will never have another veteran experience homelessness in Minnesota. But what we're saying is that we have the systems in place to make that very rare when it does occur, that it's a very short time on the registry, that we have this system in place to house them rapidly, and that they're really going to experience it one time and they're not going to cycle back into homelessness. So that's really what functional zero means.
We're speaking with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about ending veteran homelessness on Minnesota Military Radio. Sloan, I want to come back to you. I know that there's a big push to find landlords who can accommodate the homeless veterans with whatever kind of programs are available there. And that was kind of the message that we had this week at the VFW. The governor was trying to help those that own properties figure out how they can help get that door, get the veterans behind the door. You can get them employed and get them back on their feet.
Yeah, so we were really, really happy to have hosted this event just yesterday. And what we really think is super exciting and important is we have now partnered with Housing Link to be able to provide some funding mechanisms like an incentive fund and a mitigation fund in such a tight rental unit or vacancy unit. And basically the Housing Link is what we're going to be using to administer those funds. Landlords can contact Housing Link. They can put their units for availability through their website, which is housinglink.org. And we're going to be able to connect veterans from the registry to units that might be available. This is going to be a statewide process, and we're really excited to be able to offer that statewide. And we're the registry is going to be hopefully being used in multiple ways. We've made all these improvements recently to our data, and using Housing Link in this partnership is going to be a very vital piece of that.
So, Paul, does this mean that you're looking for landlords that might be willing to first rent to a homeless veteran and secondly maybe take a little less rent than they might ordinarily receive for their properties?
And we're not really asking them to take less rent. I mean, in a lot of situations, of those 207 veterans on the registry, about half of them, almost half of them, have a voucher in hand, and they're just needing a landlord or a property owner or manager to take a chance on them, and to give them kind of a helping hand. They have a way to pay for it. It's just a matter of securing a unit in a very tight market.
So we're looking for landlords everywhere, and if they want to contact you, they also go to 1-888-LINK-VET.
Yeah, if they have questions about the program, but we do again, really want them to contact and go through Housing Link. We think we have a system set up with them where that will be the most efficient way to kind of make units available to veterans on the registry.
Sloan, we just got a couple of minutes left in this segment, but one of the agencies that you partner with a lot is the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, or MACV, and they have a series of events around the state. The big one's coming up here in the Twin Cities. It's called a stand down, which actually came from a term that I first heard in Vietnam, which means when we came back out of the jungles, we had a stand down period to get showered up and cleaned up and rested up and before we go back in. And it's kind of based on that, but can you tell us about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So the stand down events are coming full throttle all throughout the summer and early fall across the state of Minnesota. And what's just like you said, there's going to be a lot of different services provided there. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs will be there to provide some housing support. There's legal support, some clothing and other support services, haircut, dental services. And so the major one is going to be here at Target Field on Friday, August 16th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. There are some other ones happening across the state, such as International Falls, Bemidji, Mankato. You can always check out the MACV website, which is mac-v.org, and you can see exactly what's going to be happening across the state throughout the next couple of months.
And Paul, as Sloan said, you've got all kinds of resources there available to help deal with the issues that may have caused the homelessness, like a legal problem or a divorce or a medical problem. VA hospital will be out there. There'll be some dental care. this is where you can get started to get those veterans, homeless veterans, and those maybe not homeless yet, back going the right way.
Exactly. I mean, there's a myriad of different reasons for why people find themselves in housing crises, and maybe they're not homeless yet, but they're close. And so I think a big part of that is connecting with our partners like MACV, who have these prevention and diversion programs in place that can keep people from having to be added to the registry.
Very good. We have to take a short break. When I come back, we're going to talk more with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about ending veteran homelessness. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about ending veterans' homelessness with Paul Williams, who's the Homelessness Programs Coordinator, and we heard from Sloan Kessler. And Paul, you brought another member of your team here. You want to introduce her?
I did. With me today is Lindsay Hofer. She's a Star of the North Fellow with the state of Minnesota. She's working with the MDVA. She has a Master's of Public Policy from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, so we're really excited to have her on the team.
Lindsay, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Lindsay, we've been talking about homelessness and a lot of things in the first segment, but one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is it's one veteran at a time. Is there an individualized approach to creating a plan for each of these veterans?
Absolutely. So the Homeless Veteran Registry mentioned earlier provides us with the ability to identify veterans and their families who are experiencing homelessness anywhere within Minnesota, and connect them with mainstream benefits as well as veteran-specific benefits. And the individualized approach really comes in with our biweekly meetings that we have with our registry partners in each of the 10 continuums of care throughout the state. Through this approach, we are able to identify the unique needs of each veteran. And this is a room full of people with a lot of experience and insight, using their collective knowledge to overcome the barriers and create individualized plans for veterans. And this housing first approach that is vital in getting our veterans to a place where they can flourish.
Paul, I'm guessing that every homeless veteran has a different need, and maybe there's a little different approach or a little fine tuning. They're not all alike, are they?
That's exactly right. Right, there's not a one size fits all approach. And what Lindsay was kind of talking about, right, is that we're able to give a very tailored set of solutions for a veteran given their specific individual needs and challenges that they're experiencing. So it's proven to be a very effective approach.
And Lindsay, I want to come back to you. I've learned over the last 9 years that there's multiple agencies involved in these things, and we talked a little bit about the MACV stand-downs, but I know that Director Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center is at the stand-downs with a lot of his team every time, so that they can provide whatever kind of support they can. You've got some great partners out there to work with.
Right. And these partnerships between nonprofits, government agencies, and even private enterprises are becoming increasingly interlinked because we realize that nothing is accomplished in silos. So the Homeless Veteran Registry and its connection with Housing Link is imperative for fostering these relationships. And these new partnerships that we're creating with landlords and the incentives that we offer them, they're really a place getting our veterans to a place where they can have a fighting chance. And as a result of these ever-growing connections, where we have been able to house more veterans at an increasing rate.
Paul, we've just got about a minute left, but when you're working with these other agencies, what you really want to work with when you get down to almost functional zero is preventative. Let's prevent our veterans from hitting the bottom.
Yeah, and that's where we see our role transitioning. Once we do finally reach our objective of ending veteran homelessness and reaching that functional zero benchmark, we will transition to a prevention and diversion approach, and we rely heavily on our partners to help with that, namely MACV and the programs that they offer. And so if anybody out there knows of a veteran who's experiencing homelessness, connect them with the registry currently via that 1-888-LINK-VET line. But even if you identify someone who might be at risk of homelessness, to connect them and encourage them that it's okay to ask for help, and connect with our partners such as MACV, because MACV will do what they can to keep them from being on the registry. But if something happens where they needed to be on the registry, MACV will assist them in connecting with that as well.
And our veterans are proud people, and it's hard for them to ask for help. But if they're having some trouble, 1-888-LINK for help. You want to help, please call.
Exactly. That's 100% correct. And there's a lot of veterans as well that are you know, veterans and non-veterans alike that are just ready to help Minnesota veterans in when they need it.
Paul, Sloan, Lindsay, thanks for joining us today. We've been talking to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about ending veterans homelessness on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Wonderful to be with you again.
Sergeant Major, speaking of welcome back, we're welcoming back a whole bunch of soldiers that spent a long time over in Kuwait from the division.
Yeah, we sure are. You know, we couldn't be more proud of our 34th Infantry Division, the Red Bull soldiers coming back after supporting Operation Spartan Shield. And they've been coming back in waves now after they out-processed through Fort Hood. And it's good to have those soldiers back in Minnesota and back on our ground.
And when they come back, they still go through a 30, 60, 90-day process to integrate back in?
Yeah, so we've changed the verbiage. We call them a post one and a post two now. So it's not that traditional 30, 60, 90 like you're familiar with. But the concept is still the same. We want to make sure that we have resources available for our soldiers that need them as they reintegrate back into civilian life after a long deployment like this.
So we're actually helping the soldiers, and there's some assistance there has been during the whole deployment for the families.
Yeah, absolutely. We cannot forget about our family members because, as you know, they served right alongside that soldier. So we need to have some resources available for them as well because there's a transition that takes place on both sides, and we want to make sure we can help both the family members and, of course, the individual soldier.
You know, Sergeant Major, we've learned on the show over the last 9 years that the deployed soldiers actually get into a battle rhythm. And they get the same routine day in, day out. They know what's expected. They know what to do. But their families are back here dealing with things that it's no routine. It's just something different every day, and there's all kinds of things to deal with. It's almost easier on the soldiers.
Yeah, I would say that it probably is easier on the soldier. And I think that's one of the main struggles is, you know, for that 10 months, 12 months, or whatever it is, that family member has been doing all the things in support of the family, things that maybe the spouse that was deployed had been doing previously. And so there's that transitional problem of finding your niche again. You know, where do I fit back in as a returning soldier? And on the family side, what can I start to let go again to, you know, let you start doing as the returning soldier, let you start doing those things that you maybe used to do, but maybe now I feel like I was doing them better. And so, yeah, there's maybe some issues there, and then we just try to work through all that. And that's why we have these post-one events, post-two events, so we can talk through some of that transitional stuff and help everybody out.
And then the children saying, who's this soldier that moved back into the house, and do I have to listen to him or her?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I bet you discipline is a pretty big topic too, right? Because
you've been through it.
I've been through it, yeah.
Now, the deployment cycle and the training cycle, everything seems like we're back in the busy part of it again. And we've got another group. Camp Ripley just sent out train loads of equipment down to Fort Hood. And the 1st Brigade Combat Team is going down there to do some training. And that's a kind of a unique base with a lot of space, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's going to allow our 1st Brigade Combat Team to get ready for that National Training Center rotation that they're going to do again in the future. And this allows them that maneuver space that you're talking about so they can train at the appropriate level and make sure that, you know, at each level in the command, they know how to control the maneuver of the vehicles, of the Bradleys, of the tanks, and, of course, have that command and control over that large area of space.
And something that most people don't think about is up at Camp Ripley, they've gotten all that equipment in the good fighting gear and ready to go, and they loaded it up on trains, shipped it down there, and after that training's over, they're going to ship it all back to Camp Ripley, and the maintenance department up there is going to have to get it ready to go again, aren't they?
Yeah, they certainly are. You know, I mean, that's a lot of work on both the front end and the back end. We've got soldiers that had to load those trains, had to get down to Fort Hood to receive the trains to unload them, and then they'll load them again and send them back. And just over the natural course of training, equipment's going to get broken, and they'll try to fix as much as they can on site. But at some point in time, we're going to get stuff loaded up. It's going to come right back to Camp Ripley. And yeah, our maintenance team is going to be expected to get that stuff up and ready and moving again because the brigade, their op tempo, their operational training tempo is not going to slow down, and they've got to have that equipment to train on to make sure that they maintain a high level of readiness.
So there's a lot of training going on, a lot of travel going on, a lot of deployments. Minnesota National Guard is busy.
Yeah, the Minnesota National Guard is extremely busy, and we can't forget that we're getting ready to send our Combat Aviation Brigade out the door here in a few months. So, you know, the people of Minnesota just need to know that they're Minnesota National Guard. We're always ready. We're standing by, always ready, and we're always moving, and we're working, and we're doing our job, and they can be proud in that, as we are, and all of our soldiers and our airmen of the Minnesota National Guard.
And Sergeant Major, just to finish up, it's summertime in Minnesota and everybody's running around the state. They're out on the lakes and the rivers and fishing and doing all kinds of things. And you've got a message for all our soldiers and our citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we just can't mention it enough. It just comes down to a simple thing, and that is being wise about what it is that you're doing. We want people to make smart, educated decisions, stop and thinking about it, you know. And, of course, you know, this time of year, the drinking and driving is always a big topic. So make a plan. Stick to your plan. Have a number to call if you need a ride. And we just want to make sure, especially inside of our military, our soldiers and our airmen, that they don't do anything that will prevent us from, as an organization, from being able to accomplish our mission. We need them always ready.
So for all our listeners out there, Sergeant Major said it, be careful this summer and don't get in trouble. And we want everybody healthy and coming back home and ready to go again. Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Tom, thanks so much. And everybody, work hard. Play hard, have fun, but be safe. Thanks a lot.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Carl Jansen from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Paul Williams, Sloan Kesserly, Lindsay Hofer, State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk to the new DAV of Minnesota Commander and discuss the upcoming ECAB deployment. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.